Once a month, around the time we start feeling a little bloated and cramped, we like to visit our favorite website, Everyday Feminism, to remind ourselves that for some people, it's that time of the month every single day. But don't get me wrong, the writers at Everyday Feminism are not shrill and insufferable viragos who try to make women miserable with toxic philosophy. They're viragos who try to make everyone miserable with toxic philosophy. For instance, this month on the site, there's a post that points out all the ways that well-meaning white teachers bring racism into our schools. So if you're a white teacher who risks her life going into a crime-ridden minority neighborhood in the desperate hope you might give some child a chance at a better life, you'll definitely want to read this article to find out how Everyday Feminism thinks you're doing it wrong. Or else you might just want to grab your crotch with one hand and stick out your middle finger with the other and make grunting noises while thrusting out your hips. You choose. But just in case you are interested, here's how Everyday Feminism thinks you white teachers might be injecting racism into our schools. One, you lower or raise achievement expectations based on race or ethnicity. If you assume that, say, Asian students are going to be good at math, while black students are going to be good at shaking down Asian students at gunpoint, you may be missing out on an opportunity to allow your Asian students to excel in other areas, like doing laundry and cooking dumplings. Instead, you should try accepting each individual student as he comes at you. Though if it's a black student coming at you, you might want to protect yourself by holding an Asian student in front of you. Two, you use racially coded language. Try not to say things to your students like, "Hey, T-Bone, you so ghetto," or, "Gee, Ling Ma, you certainly have a tiger mom." Instead, say race-neutral things like, "Hey, T-Bone, put down that gun. Put down that gun. And listen, Ling Ma, if your mother calls me at home again, I'm going to send T-Bone to hunt her down." Three, you mispronounce your students' names. According to the article, this is a subtle and powerful way that white teachers inject racism into our schools. Let's say you have a student named Letitia Harambaba Kanogi Alum Bay. If you refer to that student as Tish, or "Hey you," or "Please stop stealing the money out of the petty cash box in my desk," you may give the impression that you're so busy trying to save the child from spinning into generational poverty that you haven't got time to kowtow to her parents' fashionable and self-destructive child naming whims. Instead, you might try sitting at home all morning. knocking back whiskeys and muttering, "Screw 'em, let the little buggers teach themselves." So I think we can all agree that once again, Everyday Feminism is making the world a better place for angry, disaffected, neurotic social justice warriors who are in turn making the world a worse place for the rest of us. Trigger warning, I'm Andrew Klavan, and this is The Andrew Klavan Show.
I feel hunky-dunky. Life is tickety-boo. Birds are winging, also singing hunky-dunky-dee-doo. Ship-shape, dipsy-topsy, the world is zippity-zing. It's a wonderful day, hurrah, hooray! It makes me want to sing. Oh, hurrah, hooray! Oh, hooray, hurrah!
I begged them to let me pre-record that opening, but they wouldn't do it. Meanwhile, some really good stuff has been happening. Overnight, the Senate actually passed the budget resolution, which will help them gut Obamacare, which is hilarious that Obamacare is going to be tossed out while Obama is still in office. And if you think Obama wasn't ticked off about it, here's what he said at a press conference. Oh, I get it. He's a lame duck. Now I understand. All right. So things are getting fun and exciting, but that also means that they are getting a little uncertain. And with the uncertainty, you might start to think about the security of your savings. You know, this is going to be, I think, a good time for the economy, but that also means that there's going to be inflation. There could be inflation after all the government has been printing all that money. And you want to make sure that the money you've saved and the money you've earned doesn't lose its value. And that's why we are advertising Birch Gold, because this is the perfect opportunity to secure your hard-earned savings by moving some into precious metals. Birch Gold sells physical precious metal for your possession and will ship metals right to your front door. And right now, thanks to a little-known IRS tax law, you can even move your IRA or eligible 401k into an IRA backed by physical gold and silver. It's perfect for those who want to ensure that their hard-earned retirement savings are protected from the ravages of inflation and any more stock market crashes. Birch Gold Group has a long-standing track record of continued success with thousands of satisfied clients, countless five-star reviews, and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. Not bad. Contact Birch Gold Group now to request a free information kit on physical precious metals. The comprehensive 16-page kit reveals how gold and silver can protect your savings and how you can legally move your IRA or 401k out of risky stocks and bonds and into a precious metals IRA. To get your no-cost, no-obligation kit, go to www.birchgold.com/Andrew. That is www.birchgold.com/Andrew. Boy, oh boy, did things explode yesterday. I have to say, this, you know, this show is a little different than other shows because everybody else, most shows, you come on and hear somebody, you know, giving you a definite opinion. I'm an artist. I've lived most of my life as a novelist. And what I'm always doing is just observing things and trying to figure out what it is I'm looking at. And when you do that, you understand that some of your personal prejudices get in the way. So this week began, remember, with Meryl Streep making that stupid speech and Trump snapped back at her and said, oh, she's an overrated actress on Twitter. You know, he said she's an overrated actress. And I was thinking, like, why is he even giving her the time of day? You know, all Hollywood actresses want is for people to pay attention to them. Why does Trump snap back at them? And now he has done it with the press, with the news media. Obviously, yesterday, CNN published this story saying there was an addendum when the intelligence agencies were briefing Obama and Trump. There was an addendum saying that the Russians might have some stuff on Trump, including stuff about what he was doing with Russian prostitutes. All of it unconfirmed. All of it. The press already had it and weren't running it because they couldn't get any confirmation on it. And finally, and then BuzzFeed put the documents, the two documents, out there. So yesterday, Trump went off at his press conference. Trump went off on these guys, and Jim Acosta from CNN tried to ask him a question. And here is the exchange that now has the news media going up in smoke.
Information that was false and fake and never happened got released to the public. As far as BuzzFeed, which is a failing pile of garbage, writing it, I think they're going to suffer the consequences. They already are. And as far as CNN going out of their way to build it up. And by the way, we just found out I was coming down. Michael Cohen is a very talented lawyer. He's a good lawyer in my firm. It was just reported that it wasn't this Michael Cohen they were talking about. So all night long, it's Michael Cohen. I said, I want to see your passport. He brings his passport to my office. I say, hey, wait a minute. He didn't leave the country. He wasn't out of the country. They had Michael Cohen of the Trump Organization was in Prague. It turned out to be a different Michael Cohen. It's a disgrace what took place. It's a disgrace. And I think they ought to apologize to start with Michael Cohen.
Sir, since you're attacking us, can you give us a question? Mr. President-elect.
Go ahead.
Mr. President-elect, since you are attacking our news organization, can you give us a chance?
Your organization
You are attacking
terrible.
Our news organization.
Your organization.
Can you give us a chance
Let's
to
go.
Ask a question, sir?
Go ahead.
Sir,
Quiet.
Mr. President-elect.
Go ahead.
Can you state categorically?
She's asking a question. Don't be rude.
Mr. President-elect, can you give us a question?
Don't be rude.
You're attacking us. Can you give us a question?
Don't be rude.
Can you
I'm not going to give you a question.
Can you
state categorically?
You are fake
news. So he smushes Acosta, and CNN just crushes them, right? And, of course, now the press is fluttering around because even, as I said yesterday, even the New York Times, which is only a former newspaper, wouldn't run with this story because they knew it was nothing. You know, it was they didn't have any confirmation. Now, there you can be suspicious about Trump. He's been awfully nice to Putin. He says awfully nice things to Putin. It's perfectly fine to say he's being too soft on Russia. It's perfectly fine to say he's being sucked in by Putin or whatever you want to say. But until you got the goods, you don't go after the president-elect by sending this stuff out. Now, of course, there was a difference between what CNN did, which was report a true story that this was in the briefing, and what BuzzFeed did, which put out this garbage. So now the press itself has started to fight with each other because Sean Spicer, before that exchange, Sean Spicer got up and linked the two of them together, just condemned them both as Trump
did. Frankly, outrageous and highly irresponsible for a left-wing blog that was openly hostile to the president-elect's campaign to drop highly salacious and flat-out false information on the internet just days before he takes the oath of office. According to BuzzFeed's own editor, there are some serious reasons to doubt the allegations in the report. The executive editor of the New York Times also dismissed the report by saying it was, quote, totally unsubstantiated, echoing the concerns that many other reporters expressed on the internet. The fact that BuzzFeed and CNN made the decision to run with this unsubstantiated claim is a sad and pathetic attempt to get clicks.
Okay, so now CNN is invested in separating itself from BuzzFeed, because what BuzzFeed did was not journalism. You don't put up this document that has salacious attacks on somebody that you have no backing for, no confirmation of. Now, just remember this before we go into this deeper. Remember that during the primaries, each and every Republican candidate destroyed himself in his reaction to Trump. Trump didn't destroy them. Trump never did anything on stage, maybe with Bush, maybe Jeb Bush, by just making him look like a weakling, you know, making him look. But it was really Bush who played into that, who kept looking like what Trump said he was. Marco Rubio destroyed himself by trying to play Trump, by fighting back the same way that Trump was fighting, with these bullying techniques, with the insults. Remember, he's small hands, and we all know what that means and all this. And Cruz, an incredibly smart man, probably the smartest guy on the stage, he destroyed himself by being too smart, by strategizing. Oh, I'm gonna ride Trump for a while. He's gonna be my good friend Donald, and then at the last minute, I'm gonna break apart and all this stuff. And it was they all destroyed themselves in the way they reacted to something they hadn't seen before, and that is what is happening today to the news media. Here is first, let's look at Anderson Cooper with Kellyanne trying to separate his network CNN from BuzzFeed.
Do you acknowledge here and now that CNN did not release the 35-page unsubstantiated claims against Donald Trump, and it was misleading and untrue for Sean Spicer to suggest otherwise?
No, our incoming press secretary, Sean Spicer, was exactly right, as was the president-elect Anderson. CNN went first yesterday, and BuzzFeed went second.
We didn't report CNN what released. BuzzFeed reported.
I didn't say that you did, but you linked
Sean
to
Spicer
it
said
in your
we
story.
Did.
Let me just tell you, Anderson, let's back up. I know CNN must be feeling the heat today of having a headline yesterday at around 6:30 p.m. that said, quote, Intel chiefs presented Trump with information that Russia could compromise, Russia had information to compromise him. That is just false. And as you saw through NBC News reports today, tweets from people at Politico, no friend of Donald Trump, and a lot of outlets, print and electronic outlets, so reluctant and hesitant to go forward with anything close to what CNN or BuzzFeed did.
Well,
I know you
again,
want to distance yourself from BuzzFeed, but you went first.
Yes, you went first. And they linked to the BuzzFeed thing. You know, they linked to the BuzzFeed thing. They've got no excuse. I mean, look, what Jim Acosta was doing is typical, you know, press conference stuff. If anybody did it to Obama, however, we know what happened then. We remember when Major Garrett asked, after the Iran deal, asked Obama if he was satisfied that there were Iran was still holding four hostages while he was celebrating the Iran deal, and Obama slapped him down, you know, I'm not satisfied, and you know it, that's nonsense, and you know it. And the press went nuts. Was that disrespectful? Was that disrespectful to Obama? The famous one was Dana Bash, who said it went over the line into disrespect. But there was a show on the PBS channel in Boston called Beat the Press. Listen to this discussion after Major Garrett asked that question.
The question was just performance art. It was about Major Garrett. It wasn't about President Obama. It wasn't about the issue. And to say that, why are you, you know, you're content to... And these questions are prepared. Yeah. I mean, obviously...
No, he studied that one.
It was just awful, completely inappropriate.
It was exactly it ties back to the last subject we were discussing. There is, particularly in the Obama administration, an undercurrent in the American political discussion that believes that that Obama is out to sell out the country, he's a secret Muslim, whatever it may be. And the discussion of this Iran deal has had that tinge to it. So I think in that context, coming out and saying, like, you're here celebrating while proud patriotic Americans are, you know, suffering in Iranian prisons, that I think added an extra edge of awfulness to the question.
So, you know, I don't, by the way, I don't believe that Acosta, and oh, I should add, by the way, that Acosta defended Major Garrett at the time. Acosta came out and said the question was completely appropriate. A lot of people were talking about it. So Acosta stood up for his fellow reporter and didn't. But why were they even discussing it? Who cares if you're disrespectful to the president? I don't think Acosta owes Trump an apology. The question is Trump doing anything wrong? Because now he's going to be like, oh, this is terrible. You know, the president of the United States, it's chilling. It's chilling to free speech. We're going to hear all that stuff. We're already hearing it in the New York Times, as I said, a former newspaper. I got to stop here to say goodbye to our friends on Facebook and YouTube, but Facebook has been giving us a little trouble over there. So what you want to do is come over to thedailywire.com, subscribe. You can watch the whole thing from beginning to end, and you don't have to worry about liberal censors. Okay, so now Chuck Todd has Ben Smith from BuzzFeed on and tries to separate the two of them. Play the Chuck Todd one first, the second cut first.
The information environment, fake news, are now these, they're factors in the conversation.
But haven't you just participated? I mean, look, the fake news thing has turned into this, you know.
I think different kinds of information.
Didn't you just, and I'm sure, I know this was not your intent. I've known you a long time. But you just published fake news.
So this is amazing, because first of all, remember, this fake news thing was their thing, and we took it away from them by pointing out all the fake news that they had put out over the Trump campaign and over the Obama years. All of us did this online, and we embarrassed them, and that's why Chuck Todd doesn't want to talk about fake news, because he knows this, that was like a cigar that blew up in their face. They thought, we're gonna have the fake news thing now. We're gonna show them it's all fake. You know, it just blew their heads off, because they are the worst purveyors of fake news. And just to be fair, let's let Smith tell why he ran this story, his excuse.
But this was a document that was not just circulating at the highest levels of the intelligence community, the most powerful intelligence officials in the country, referring to it in briefings to the President of the United States, the President-elect, reportedly, disputedly. Mm-hmm. The political elite, you know, top elected officials, the Gang of Eight, right. John McCain saw it. Certainly the media elite had it.
Right.
And I think, and we're not, and not didn't just had it, but we're starting to act on it. Harry Reid had written a letter referring to it. And I think when you have an object that is in play, that is having consequences for the way our elected leaders are acting, you do have to ask the question of why should I suppress that? There are then good reasons, right?
Right.
Once, though, it emerges, as it did last night, that in the public conversation that there is this secret document floating around full of dark allegations that we will not repeat to you, that I feel like in this era you really have to show your readers what that is. In an appropriate context,
right.
In our original report, I mean, if you read what we wrote, it stressed that there were real solid reasons to distrust this. It noted two specific errors.
So what I want to point out is this. Remember, Obama whined about Fox News for 8 years. Oh, Fox News, everybody doesn't like me because of Fox News. It's not because your health plan stank. It's not because the economy is in the toilet. It's not because, you know, the Middle East is on fire. It was Fox News. It was Fox News telling people, always Fox News. And nobody ever said a word about this. Nobody, except on Fox News, nobody ever said, you know, yeah, nobody ever said like, oh my God, he's picking on the press. It's chilling to free speech and all. Just remember the difference here. Fox News just had a different opinion. All they did was they had a different opinion about Obama. This was Trump criticizing an act of malfeasance. This was an act of journalistic malfeasance. They all acknowledge it. They all know it. He gave them what they deserved. But he is changing the rules of the game. And the question I want to ask myself, as well as everybody else, is this a positive thing? I mean, this is obviously one of the key reasons why he was elected. John McCain, when, you know, John McCain gets all this respect from the press as long as he is screwing up Republican platforms. But the minute he steps out and runs against a Democrat for president, he's trash. They trash him. Remember, the New York Times actually ran like a front page story suggesting that he might have had an affair, a completely unsubstantiated story that they ran on the front page. It was absolutely abhorrent. Mitt Romney, same thing. They came after him. He put his dog on the roof. Remember all this nonsense that they, you know, he let a man die of cancer. It was stuff that was just terrible. And now they wonder, why does the public support Donald Trump when he kicks them down the road like an old tin can? But this is what he does. They are making him look like a genius in the same way Marco Rubio did when he reacted to him. It's not Trump destroying the press. It's the press destroying themselves by reacting to Trump. Listen to this piece in the New York Times. The news conference, they're criticizing the news conference. The news conference came less than a day after President Obama's farewell address in Chicago, and it previewed the tonal whiplash the country is in for come January 20th. Mr. Obama has had his own run-ins with reporters, but his speech reflected how, for better or worse, he governed on an appeal to reason and common values. Presuming a reservoir of goodness in other people, he said, can be a risk. That's one risk Mr. Trump doesn't take. His language is the language of preemptive strikes and confrontation, competing, hitting, winning. This is crap. I mean, it is utter. Obama, you know, had that mask of civility. He knew how to speak like a civil man, which Trump doesn't know how to do. But every time he framed an issue, he framed it in terms of his opponents were racist, his opponents were making common cause with terrorists, his opponents were bigots, they weren't, that's not who we are. It was like, you know, you're not, when you say that's not who you are, you're basically calling people un-American. You know, when conservatives call people un-American, everybody goes crazy. We are seeing a little bit of this in the hearings, the confirmation hearings, which have now become kind of a kabuki show because everybody knows these guys are going to get through. They just don't have the votes to stop them. They destroyed their own chances to stop them when Harry Reid put the nuclear option in and just said we need a majority to approve presidential appointees. So now it's just a show to play to their voters and their audience. So Jeff Sessions is up for attorney general, and John Lewis, who used to be a great man, he was part of the civil rights movement, a genuine hero of the civil rights movement, but is now kind of playing on that. He gets up and gives this testimony about Jeff Sessions. Listen to this for a minute.
When a white person was walking down the same sidewalk, who did not move to the back of the bus, who drank from a white water fountain, who looked a white person directly in the eyes, could be arrested and taken to jail. The forces of law and order in Alabama were so strong that to take a stand against this injustice, we had to be willing to sacrifice our lives for our cause. It took massive, well-organized, nonviolent dissent for the Voting Rights Act to become law. It required criticism of this great nation and its laws to move toward a greater sense of equality in America. We have come a distance. We have made progress, but we're not there yet. There are forces that want to take us back to another place. We don't want to go back.
What the hell is he talking about? I mean, look, you know, first of all, you know, there are problems in the black community, but they are not the problems of the old days. They are not the problems of the government. You know, the stuff he's talking about, it really happened. He was really there. He was heroic. He stood up. He helped change America for the better. What has that got to do with Jeff Sessions? How dare he put Jeff Sessions as opposed to the civil rights? I mean, that's insane. It's insane. And meanwhile, by the way, in the Capitol, there is a high school contest, a high school art contest, where they put up things, and some kid has put up a picture of the cops shooting at black protesters, and the cops are pigs, boars, horses. The cops have heads like animals, okay? And the protesters are carrying signs say, stop killing, racism kills. You know, it's like, and every time some Republican walks by and takes it down, John Lewis is out there saying, oh, free speech. You know, I mean, come on. What would happen if some high school kid made a picture where the black protesters had gorilla heads, you know? I mean, he would protest against that, and well, he should. A picture in the Capitol building showing cops as pigs? Come on. You know, what year is this? You can't live on your glory forever. This is why revolutions devour themselves, because they don't want to let go of the glory of the revolution. And then, you know, Cory Booker is up there running for president in 2020, and he's making the same speech. We're not going to play that, but it's just ridiculous. You know, Cory Booker is not going to be president for a number of reasons. And one of them is because as a senator, he got up and testified against another senator. You don't do that. He's not going to have any friends when he tries to run for president. And Rubio is doing kind of the same thing. You know, Rex Tillerson, I understand the criticisms of Rex Tillerson because of Trump's kind words for Putin, because he's always saying nice things about Putin, same as Barack Obama did, same as George W. Bush did. But he's just kind of gone very far on this, you know, what a strong leader, smart guy, blah, 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 blah. You know, because of that, and Rex Tillerson does business with Putin because he was running ExxonMobil, and they have a lot of oil and gas, so he's doing business with them. Because of this, it's fair to question Rex Tillerson on this. Personally, you know, I think Tillerson has been pretty good. He had this exchange where he talked about what went wrong, that the response to the Crimean annexation and the Ukraine invasion were too weak.
I think the absence of a very firm and forceful response to the taking of Crimea was judged by the leadership in Russia as a weak response, and therefore...
So what would you have done after we were surprised by what they did in taking over Crimea? What should the U.S. leadership have done in response to that, that we didn't do?
I would have recommended that the Ukraine take all of its military assets it had available, put them on that eastern border, provide those assets with defensive weapons that are necessary just to defend themselves, announce that the U.S. is going to provide them intelligence, and that there will either NATO or U.S. will provide air surveillance over that border to monitor any movements.
So your recommendation would have been to do a more robust supply of military?
Yes, sir. What Russian leadership would have understood is a powerful response that indicated, yes, you took the Crimea, but this stops right here.
So those aren't the words of a Putin puppet. And when you look at Tillerson's actual record in Russia, a lot of the things he did were, when Obama was pushing the Russian reset, he was traveling to Russia with an ExxonMobil executive in tow to say, you know, we're going to be friendly with it. So a lot of it was done in that context. Marco Rubio yesterday, you know, had this whole thing, will you call Putin a war criminal? And of course he's not going to call him a war criminal. He's got to sit down and talk to him. It's ridiculous. But Rubio has a point about Putin because he's a war criminal. Putin is a war criminal, and Rubio's right, and Rubio's a hawk and all this stuff. But now Rubio is asked, will he vote against him? Because remember, it only takes three votes. The Republicans, it only takes three votes to knock one of these guys down. So here's Rubio being asked if he'd vote against them.
Are you prepared to be the one Republican to vote no?
Well, I'm prepared to do what's right. I'm not analyzing it from a partisan standpoint. I was elected by the people of Florida. I have a very clear view on foreign policy, both in my presidential race and in my reelection. I swore an oath about a week ago to protect, defend, and uphold the Constitution of this country, and that Constitution requires me to provide advice and the consent of the president's nominees. My view is that the president deserves wide latitude in their nominations, but the more important the position is, the less latitude they have. It's like a cone. It's really wide. In some positions, as it gets higher and higher, the discretion becomes more limited and our scrutiny should become higher.
So here's what I think of this. I mean, it's like I'm not impugning Marco Rubio's integrity, but there's a kabuki show to this because he is in no way going to cast a vote against Tillerson that would be decisive. When he's in committee, when he's in committee, he'll vote for him. If he thinks that he can cast a vote against him that's not going to change anything, he might cast a vote against him. But if he's joined by two other people and they knock Tillerson down, I just do not believe that's going to happen. I believe he's going to pass and pass easily. So here's the thing. I think that Trump is doing something really, really interesting, and I have a visceral reaction against it. I don't like, you know, to see the president shouting down a reporter. I don't like to see the president, you know, insulting some actress. Like, who cares about Meryl Streep? Who cares what she thinks? The president should be way, way above that. But the media is no longer the media. The media is now an atmosphere. The media is now the stage on which all of this stuff takes place because the media is pervasive. And people like me and, you know, all of us who fight on the internet, who have been blogging and broadcasting and railing against the culture, the narrative, the left-wing narrative that has been so pervasive, we're winning. We're winning. You see these guys coming up, and Trump is taking advantage of that and changing the rules of the game. And so we're going to have to wait and see what happens. Will he change? You know, the press is either going to double down on this, and then I think they're going to destroy themselves just like Marco Rubio did in the primaries, or they're going to have to come up with a new, fairer way of reporting the news. And if Trump accomplishes that, he will have accomplished an amazing thing. And people like me who don't like, you know, who like things to be civil, who like things to be, you know, kind of stately, I'll just have to admit that it's a new world and certain things are going to happen in it that I don't like, but they might accomplish things that I do like. Speaking of stuff I like, you know, let me move on to bring this into the cultural setting. I watched this film, Nocturnal Animals, and it's a really, really interesting movie by, I have to, before I even talk about it, I have to tell you that it opens with the credits are utterly naked women who weigh like 450 pounds dancing around, some of whom are in their 60s. And it's really not fun to watch. Now, you know, let me be blunt. It's like I was kind of like, ooh, you know. And when I've told it about people, a lot of people just say, well, I'm not watching that. You know, I'm not, you know. And this is by Tom Ford, who is a gay designer who has been attacked many times for using nude women as, you know, he says he's an equal opportunity objectifier. He made a picture called The Single Man, which I didn't see, which was about a gay guy based on a Christopher Isherwood story. This movie is so conservative in its cultural references that I almost couldn't believe that I was watching it. It's just, what it is, it's a story. The naked women, the naked fat women, are part of an art gallery opening. They are the art in the gallery, and it just shows you how empty and stupid and cold modern art is, and how empty and stupid and cold liberal urban life is. Because Amy Adams plays this art dealer who has lost everything. She's in this nonsense marriage. Her art is ridiculous. Fat women dancing around. You know, it's just and it's all utterly empty. And meanwhile, the evil Republican played by Laura Linney, who is a woman I'm deeply in love with because she reminds me of my wife, but she looks horrible in this because she's supposed to be a Republican. So the word Republican is used as a pejorative in the movie. Oh, she's a Republican. Oh, God. But she's right about everything. She comes on and she's right about everything. There's a woman in this who has her baby on a phone monitor, and you just look at her and she's not being a mother to this. She's neglecting this child, and she's more happy about her phone, her monitor app than she is about having the baby. And it is just a brutally, brutally critical attack on modern liberal life, and yet it's done from a liberal perspective. And this is one of the ways we win in the culture when they are attacking us, but they're saying what we are saying. You know, I mean, because that's, they're never going to listen to us. Remember this, they are never going to listen to us, but they will listen to each other. And, you know, when a guy like Tom Ford, who is right there in the center of this, says, you know, a woman who has a baby and then is more interested in the app that watches the baby instead of taking care of the baby, there's something wrong with this woman. There's something cold and empty and alienated about this woman. And that's what the story is about. It's not, you know, it's a pretty interesting movie. I liked it because it's basically her ex-husband sends her a thriller novel he's written. And half the movie is the thriller novel and half the movie is her life. And it's about how the art, it's based on a novel, and it's about how the thriller kind of interacts with her life. All right, the Clavenless weekend is upon us already. Man, there's so much news that it's all going by like so fast, you know? It's like...
Enjoy the countdown. I know
that from the talented Shapiro, Rebecca has made us this countdown clock. Every time I look at it, I'm just afraid the seconds are going to stop ticking away, you know, and somehow we're going to get frozen in Obama time forever, you know. But no, just 7 days, 10 hours. Oh my God, I am so excited to see the back of this guy. What a drag he has been on the mood of this country. What a drag. And they all, you know, these reporters, just loving on him has just been embarrassing. I would much, much rather see the press shouting at the president and the president shouting back than watching the love fest that has gone on for the last 8 years. Bring it on. Bring it on. I got to say, I'm having a great time so far. I'm suspicious of Trump. I'm always watching Trump through my fingers. So far, I'm having the best time. I hope you guys are having a good time. Now it's the Clavenless weekend. We're all going to die. But aside from that, the survivors gather here. Let me end. I always like to end with music. Here is a song I really like that you have never heard of. I will tell you, I know you've never heard of this. You know, I get sent stuff all the time. Please read my book. Please read my article. Please listen to this. Please watch my video. I can almost never do it. I just, if I start saying yes, and my time will be completely destroyed. But this was sent to me by someone whose daughter went to school with my daughter. This was years ago, 10 years ago, he sent me this. And I kind of glanced at it, and I thought, whoa, this is really good. And I even sent it to a guy in the record business that I like. Nothing ever came of it and all this stuff. But I just love this song, and this band has kind of limped along, has never really caught on. But it's called Elizabeth and the Catapults. And this is a song called Race You Back Home. It's about that moment at the end of the day when kids head back to home, head back home. And I just have always really liked this song. So let's end with that. I'm Andrew Clavin. This is the Andrew Clavin Show. The Clavinless Weekend is here. Survivors gather here on Monday.
Gonna race you, race you, race you, race you back home. The sun's going down now, and I'm ready to go, I'm ready to go. Cause there's a dirt on my skirt and pebbles stuck in my toes. Oh, which way should we go down? Nobody knows, nobody knows. I'm gonna race you back home.